بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. This is our eighth session from Medina Books, الجزء الأول, first volume. And today, after the review that we had before the Salat, inshallah we'll be going into a new chapter. And as is our normal custom, inshallah we normally review whatever we had in the previous class or in previous classes. We take any questions related to the matters that we already covered. And after that, we will look at the new chapter, that is the key, the English key in the back of the book, where we will most importantly examine the grammatical points that are in this lesson, explain them, discuss them, and hope that it will become clear from that discussion. And then we look at the vocabulary for the new lesson. Both of these things, the grammatical points and the vocabulary, you had for a homework assignment to go ahead and look at it. You should have already read it. You should have already begun to memorize some of the vocabulary. As we mentioned previously, in order for us to go through the dialogue in the beginning of the new lesson, you have to be familiar with the vocabulary. So it's a standing homework assignment. Whenever we have a new chapter, if I forget to tell you, it's your responsibility to know that that new chapter, you have to look at the vocabulary and you have to look at the grammatical points so that you're already somewhat familiar with it. And I did mention that in the last class, and I did send you a reminder, homework assignment, to remind you to do that. So I hope you have looked at the vocabulary. I hope you have looked at the grammatical points. In any case, that's what we're going to go over today. And after that, then we'll read the dialogue and discuss the dialogue, the grammatical points that it contains, and then we'll go into the exercises, which are basically intended to give you practice with the new grammatical points that we're taking in this lesson. Okay, so that's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to go to a new chapter, lesson number 5, which deals with al-idafa. Ameen. Tayyib. By the way, also part of the homework assignment was to write out the first 4 exercises of lesson number 5. Because we did discuss the idafa in this chapter. We discussed it in the last class. And I hope that you began to look at those exercises, have done as much of them as you were able to do. And inshallah, when we go over them in the class, then you can correct any mistakes that you made. But it's good that you try to get ahead and preview the lesson and try to work with it before you come to class. And the last thing that we had is our homework assignment, which is very, very important, and that is the audio files, to listen to the audio files. Brothers and sisters, one of the great benefits that we have in front of us today is that we have the lessons recorded on audio files that are free for you to download and listen to at your pleasure. And this is a tremendous help, because if you listen to the audio files, you will hear the lesson over and over and over again. And it will familiarize you with the vocabulary, and you will get used to hearing the structure, the sentence structure of Arabic structures, and you will also hear the way to, how do you pronounce these words? How do you pronounce these words? This will help you in your speaking of Arabic language, to listen to the audio files, which both trains your ear to comprehend and to get used to hearing Arabic, and at the same time helps you in your own pronunciation of Arabic words, because when you hear it being pronounced, then it will help you when you try to pronounce it yourself. So please, like, don't take this matter lightly. The audio files are extremely beneficial, but they're not going to benefit unless we listen to them. So if you download it into your computer or your telephone or whatever kind of equipment you have, and you listen to it whenever you have a chance, whenever you're not really occupied with something that requires your full attention, you can just listen to it in the background, whether you're at home, in your car, or wherever you are. So please try to listen to those audio files now. On your tablet? How are you able to get it on your tablet? You know better than me. I don't know anything about this electronic stuff. But inshallah, what you can do is send us an email, right? Is your name in the class email list? Your email address? Have you given it to us?
Yes.
For this class?
My Gmail.
Huh?
My Gmail.
Your Gmail? Okay. Send me an email then, right? Send me an email to our address for the class. And remind me that you want the audio files. And I'll send you the link. All you have to do is open it up and download it into your tablet. inshallah. And this is helpful, okay? So, with that being said, let us look at the as a quick review before we look at the key, okay? Let's look at this. What we're going to be dealing with in this lesson is four things. The most important of them is al-idafa, the idafa construction. Okay, they say in English that this is a construct phrase. And we said previously before the salah, that the meaning of this is that it is as though you are constructing something. That you have two parts, like for example, you have one word, qalamun. And you have another word, waladun. These are two components, right? When you take them, these two elements, and put them together, you're constructing, you're building something new. Okay, the example that we gave earlier was babun and albayt. Let's give another example here. That's a little bit different, but the same rules apply. We have qalamun and we have waladun. And we want to construct them into a new phrase. Okay? It's called the construct phrase. In Arabic, it's al-idafa. Al-idafa. Okay? When we put them into this special arrangement, this construction, we're going to give a new meaning to these two words. The meaning when they come together is going to be a little bit different than the meaning when they're individual elements. Okay? Waladun means, qalamun means what? A pen. And waladun means a boy or a child, right? Okay, so when we put them together, we want to make a new meaning. We want to change it from a pen, a boy, we want to change it to a boy's pen, a boy's pen. We could change it to the boy's pen, but we want to do this one indefinite this time because the previous example we gave was definite, right? So now we want to do indefinite so we can see the difference between the two. Okay? So what we said is that, number one, the first part of the construct phrase is called mudafun. And the second part of the construct phrase is called mudafun ilayhi. Okay? So the first part, its rule is that it never takes alif lam, and it never takes tanween. Okay, so we got to make a change here. First change we're going to get rid of. We don't have an alif lam here, right? There's no alif lam. So there's nothing to get rid of here. But there's tanween, right? So we're going to get rid of one of these vowels. So we won't have tanween, right? The second part of the construct phrase, we said, it must take either alif lam or tanween. Okay? So does it have a tanween? We're good. We have tanween. So we're okay. All right? It has to take either alif lam or tanween. The first part never takes alif lam nor tanween. The second part is the opposite. It must take either alif lam or tanween. One or the other. Okay? So we're good so far, right?
No.
That's the first rule. The first rule is in reference to what? Alif lam and tanween. The mudalfun, the first part, never takes either of them. The mudalfun ilay, the second part, has to take either one of them. But it can't take both of them, right? It can't be definite and indefinite at the same time. Can't be al waladun, the a boy. Doesn't make any sense, right? So it has to be al waladu, the boy, or waladun, a boy. Okay, in this case we have tanween, so it's indefinite. Waladun, a boy. The second rule, we said, is in reference to the vowel ending. The first part of the construct phrase, the mudalfun, it can take any vowel. Dhamma, kasra, or fatta. In this case, we have a dhamma. But it can take a kasra, right? What if there was a preposition before? It would make this what? It would make a kasra, because it would be what? Yes, but I'm saying, what do we call that when... Majroor. We say it's majroor, right? In the genitive case, majroorun. Because the preposition makes a noun after it, majroor, right? So it could take a kasra. And if it was the object of the verb, it would be mansub and it would have to take fatta. But we're not going to worry about that now. We're just saying, we're just making a clarification that the first part of the construct phrase, it can take any vowel. Fatta, kasra, or dhamma. As far as the second part, it has to take kasra. It has to take kasra. Naam.
Well, what's that? You know, I should send it to...
You should send it to MAB... 93044, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
At Gmail. I think. Taib. Okay, so what's the second rule? That the first part of the construct phrase, the mudalf, al-mudalfu, or mudalfun, it can take any vowel, dhamma, or kasra, or fatta. Depends on its place in the sentence. Depends on its place in the sentence. It can take any vowel. The second part is the opposite. It can't take any vowel. It can only take one vowel, and that is?
Kasra.
Kasra. Has to take kasra. Okay, those are the two rules of Ibafa. That's what we need to know. Normally, the translation of the meaning would be understood with the word of. Like here, you say, the door of the house. And here you would say, a pen of a child or boy. A pen. Because this one is indefinite. I'm sorry. This should be tanween, right? Type.
Yes.
It could be translated in English that might be a little more pleasant to the ear. Instead of saying a pen of a boy, you would say a boy's pen or a child's pen. Okay? But generally speaking, the word of is normally included in the meaning. However way you may word it or phrase it, but it's of. Okay? It may mean, like in this case, the door of the house. Mean it's a part of the house. Or in this case, a pen of a child. It's not a part of it, what? It's ownership. Showing ownership. Possession. Possession. Okay? Sometimes it may show relationship. It doesn't have to be possession. Okay, normally we say it's the possessor, the possessed, and the possessor. The thing that's possessed and the one who possesses it. But not all the time. Because in this case, the house doesn't possess the door, right? But the door is a part of the house. And in this case, it is possession. The pen is possessed by the child. But in other case, it could be the husband of Maryam. She doesn't possess him, I hope. And she doesn't own him. But she is they're related, right? He's related to her. He's her husband. Or she's his wife. Okay, so it can show relationship also. Okay, so these are some of the meanings of Ibafa. But the most common meaning is possession. But it's not always possession, okay? So possessor and possessed is not always applicable. But that's the general usage that we will find, okay? Now, what we have to do here is, number one, we got to get rid of this tanween, right? Because you can't have tanween or alif lam. And what we have to do here is we have to change this dhamma to kasra. Notice in the previous case, there was a single dhamma. It became a single kasra. In this case, there's a double dhamma. So it must become what? A double kasra. If the word has one vowel, it will remain as one vowel, but it will change from dhamma to kasra. If it has a double vowel, it will remain as a double vowel, but it will change from dhamma to kasra. So if the word has alif lam, it's going to have a single kasra because it has a single dhamma. If the word doesn't have alif lam, it has tanween, it's going to be a double kasra because it was a double dhamma. It's clear?
Yes.
Okay. That's the main thing that we want to look at in terms of al-idhafa. For the other matters that are discussed in this lesson, are relatively simple, and inshallah we'll go over them when we read the key, and we'll go over them when we do the exercises, and we'll go over them when we read the dialogue. Okay, the other 3 points in this lesson. Fine, let's look at, open your book to the key, in the back of the book. Open to the English key. It's on page 12. Page 12, in the back of the book, English key. All the way to the back of the book. All the way to the back. Now, the last part of the book. Okay? Last part of the book. You're on page 43. Yeah, you're way off. Okay, does everybody have it? Page 12 in the back of the book? English key?
Yes. No.
No, all the way to the back of his book. Go to the back. Turn all the way to the other side. Yeah. All the way to the other side. Back there. Yeah. Now, look there in English 12. Page 12 in English. Right there. Tayyip? All right. Okay, so what do we have here? Lesson 5. In this lesson, we learn the following. There are 4 points in this lesson. The first point, number 1, it has 4 points. A, B, C, and D. That's 1 point. Okay? It just has subdivisions. A, B, C, and D. On the next page, we'll see the other 3 points, which are all very, very brief. But this is the main essence of this lesson, the Idalfa. It's point number 1, and it has 4 parts. In this lesson, we learn the following. Bilal's book. Kitabu Bilalin. Kitabu Bilalin. Huh? That means the book of Bilal or Bilal's book. Okay? The book of Bilal. The book is possessed and Bilal is the possessor, the one who possesses it or owns it. Second example. The Imam's house, Baytul Imami, Baytul Imami. Notice, in Kitabu Bilalin, the first word is the thing possessed. It is called mudaf or mudafun. Huh? It's called what? Mudaf. The first part of the construct phrase is called mudaf. The second word, bilalin, is the possessor. It is called mudaf ilayhi or mudafun ilayhi. Alright? So these are two Arabic expressions that we need to know in reference to this topic of al-idaf, a construct phrase. First part is called mudaf. Second part is called mudafun ilayhi. Jayid? Tayyib. Note that A, the mudaf takes neither the definite nor the indefinite article. What is the definite article? Huh? Alif lam. Alif lam. When you see alif lam, that's the definite article. It means the house, the book, the boy. Huh? But we said the first part neither takes definite nor indefinite article. What is the indefinite article? Tanween. A. A book, a boy, a house, a man. Indefinite article. So the first part neither takes definite nor indefinite article. So it is wrong to say Kitabun Bilalin or Al Kitabu Bilalin. Okay, the first one, why is it wrong to say Kitabun Bilalin? Why is that wrong? Naam, Ahmed. Okay, don't say indefinite or indefinite, but we say, you're right, but don't say indefinite or indefinite, because we're going to explain a little further. But what he's saying, the first part of the mudaf, it never takes alif lam or tanween. It never takes alif lam or tanween, meaning it doesn't take the alif lam that indicates that it's definite, nor does it take tanween that indicates that it's indefinite. But the reason why I say don't say it's neither definite or indefinite is because it can be definite or indefinite, but it won't take alif lam or tanween. It will become definite or indefinite based on the second part, mudafun ilayh. If the mudafun ilayh is definite, it becomes definite. See, it doesn't have alif lam, but we said the house, the door of the house, right? Where do we get the door? Because the second part is definite. And here we said a pen of a child. Why do we say a pen? There's no tanween in it because the child is indefinite. Okay, so if the second word is indefinite, the first word automatically follows that rule. It becomes indefinite. If the first word is definite, like this, the second word automatically becomes definite, following the rule of the second word. Okay, so we don't say it's neither definite or indefinite. No, it will be either definite or definite, but not with alif lam or tanween. It will become definite based on the second word being definite, the mudafun ilayh. Or it will become indefinite based on the second word being indefinite. Okay? So, what's wrong here, he said, is that this tanween on the first word, it can't take, the first word can't take tanween, neither alif lam nor tanween. As far as the second example, al-kitabu bilalin, what's wrong with that one? What's wrong with it? Huh? Al-kitabu bilalin, naam, Ismail.
It showed the definite and
indefinite. It has alif lam.
Alif lam.
There's no tanween on the first word, it's tanween on the second word. Tanween on the second word is okay. The problem is with this example here, the problem is not the problem is that the first word cannot take alif lam, as it has alif lam here. It can't take tanween, nor can it take alif lam. That's the problem. Okay? As far as the second word having tanween, that's okay. The second word has to take alif lam or tanween. So if it has tanween, that's good. Okay? But it has to be what? The second word has to always be majroor, single kasra or double kasra. And in this case, it has kasra, so it's good. It's no problem. But the first word is the problem. Okay? The mudaf, we're reading again here, the mudaf is definite by position and does not need the definite article. It's what? It's definite by position. What do we mean by it's definite by position? We mean that the first word here, in this case, bab, right? It's definite by position. Why? Because its connection to the second word, which is definite with alif lam, in this case, because it has alif lam, so its position in connection to this word, which is definite, makes it also definite. So it's definite by position. That's what they mean by that. They mean that it's connected to a word that's definite. And therefore, it's also definite. And let me remind you that a word could be definite without having Alif Lam. Alif Lam is the main indication that something is definite. But there are some words which are definite and they don't have Alif Lam. Remember when we talked about proper nouns. Remember we said names of people, proper nouns are definite. Even though masculine proper nouns take tanween, right? Like Muhammadun, Mahmudun, right? They take tanween. But they're not indefinite. Proper nouns are definite. Because why? A proper noun is talking about a specific, particular person. That's definite. When you say, I saw Mahmud, you're not talking about anybody. You're talking about somebody particular. You're talking about Mahmud. Somebody came in and said, I saw Mahmud. You're not just talking about anybody. You're talking about a particular person. So that's definite. Proper nouns are definite. Okay, without Alif Lam. Automatically they're definite. Feminine and masculine proper nouns are definite. Masculine proper nouns take tanween. Feminine proper nouns do not take tanween. Remember we had two lists of names. First column, the masculine names, they all have tanween. Second column, feminine names, they don't have tanween. But they're all definite. They're all definite. Proper nouns, whether masculine or feminine or definite. Okay, that's a side point. That's something that we discussed previously, but I'm just reminding you of that. So you don't get sidetracked. But the important thing is here, right? He said that this word, the first word is definite by position. Why? Because the word that it's connected to is definite. Either because it has Alif Lam, or because it's a proper noun, or some other reason, okay? But in this case it has Alif Lam, so it's clear, right? Let us add, it's not written here, but we're going to add, right? And we're going to say that the first word, the mudhafun, just as it can be definite by position, it can also be indefinite by position. Because if it's connected to a word that's indefinite, it will automatically become indefinite. Huh? Excuse me? No, two definite words will not be connected to each other. In idalfa, the first word of the idalfa, it is definite or indefinite based on the word that it's connected to. Not by itself, because of what it's connected to. Okay. So, what is the point here? The point is that the first word of the idalfa construction, it can be definite or it can be indefinite based on its position. What do we mean by position? Based on what it is connected to. In that phrase, that construct phrase. Is it connected to a word that's definite? Or is it connected to a word that's indefinite? That's what determines its definite or indefiniteness. Okay? Fayyib. After this, point B. The mudaf ilayhi is in the genitive case. It is in the genitive case. What do we mean? That it has kasra, single vowel, if it has alif lam, or double vowel, if it doesn't have alif lam. Right? But it is what? It is in the genitive case. In Arabic we call that what? Majroor. Majroor. We just erased it from the board. You should remember that. We just looked at it. Taib is majroor. It can have tanween, as in the first example, or in this example for us here, or in the first example on the paper, bab baytu bilalin. Okay? Or kitabu bilalin. It can have tanween, as in the first example, or alif lam, as in the second example. Meaning the second part of the construct phrase, it can either take alif lam or it can take tanween. It has to take one of them, one or the other. Okay? So, if it has alif lam, it's going to have a single kasra. And if it has tanween, it's going to have a double kasra. And then we have two more examples here. We have bilalun, right? If you put it in a construct phrase, baytu bilalin, okay, it has tanween, but it has to have a kasra vowel. In the second example, al-imamu becomes baytu al-imami. Okay, it has to have kasra. In either case, you can have tanween or can have alif lam, but it must have kasra. Third point, C, kitabu men, whose book, or the book of who? Men, right? Men is a word that we had in the first lesson. Remember? We had two question words, right? We had ma and we had men. And ma is used when we're asking about what? Objects, things. And men is used when we're asking about people. So we had this word men, right? Kitabu men. This is a construct phrase. The book of who? Or, in more pleasant English language, we'll say what? Whose book? Whose book? Okay? So this construction here, this is a regular construct phrase, but there's something different about it. What is it? Note that men is not in the genitive case because it is indeclinable. That is, it does not change. Yani the ending of the word does not change to indicate its function. There are certain indeclinable nouns in Arabic which remain unchanged. Meaning that there are certain words in Arabic language, there are certain nouns, that the ending of it is not going to change. It's going to remain the same. Okay, so men is one of those words. It's mabniun ala sukun. That means that the sukun is going to remain on that word in terms of its grammatical position in the sentence, even though it's in the place where it should be majroor and take kasra, but because it's mabniun ala sukun, means it's fixed on sukun. That sukun is not going to change except in pronouncing the word, if the word with sukun is followed by alif lam, or word that has hamza til wasl, then we're going to add a vowel in order to connect. Because you can have two words, you can have two letters with sukun back to back. So in that case, we're just going to put a kasra there, okay? In this case, the men, we'll put a kasra there. If it was men, we'll put a fatha there. But that's not important for us right now. The point is, I'm just saying to you that maybe I said to you, it always remains sukun, and then you open a book and you see a kasra there, right? And you say, what happened? Or you see a fatha there. That's for pronunciation only. But in terms of the grammatical position of the word, it's not going to take a kasra because it's majroor. Rather, if you see a kasra, it's going to be because there's an alif lam following it. And in order to connect the words together for pronunciation, they're going to put a vowel there. That's it. But otherwise, this word, it will not indicate that it is majroor by taking a kasra. It's going to remain with sukun. Okay? So we're going to see some words like that sometime. The vowel ending on it is not going to change. It's going to remain the same. Okay? And we will be seeing those words soon. So just make a note of that, that sometimes the second part of the construct phrase, even though it's in the position where it should be majroor, taking kasra, but instead of it taking kasra, it's going to remain with whatever its ending is, unchanging. Okay, the last point concerning the construct phrase is that we have an example here, ala maktabil mudarrisi. Ala maktabi al-mudarrisi. Note that maktab is in the genitive case. And in this example here, maktab is the first part of the construct phrase. Maktab al-mudarris. The first part of the construct phrase is maktab. And I said before, remember, that the first part, it can take any vowel, but the second part has to take kasra. So the first part, even though we're seeing dhamma here, it doesn't always have to be dhamma. I said, well, it can take any vowel. The second part has to take kasra. The first part can take any vowel. They're the opposite in this point. This is the second rule that we had. So here we have an example of the first part of the construct phrase not taking a dhamma, rather it's taking a kasra. Why is it taking kasra? Huh? Because of preposition. Because the word before it is a preposition. And the preposition makes the noun that follows it majroor. Taking kasra, okay? So this is a proof that the first word, the first part of the construct phrase, the mudhaf, this is a proof that the mudhaf is not always going to be a dhamma. But rather sometimes it may be kasra, as in this case. And sometimes it may even be fatha. If it's the object of a verb, or if it's the ism inna or something like this that we'll look at later on, not now. Okay, so note that maktab is in the genitive case because of the preposition ala, and al-mudarris is in the genitive case because it is mudafun ilayhi. Because it is mudafun ilayhi. So now we have two reasons. In the last lesson, we said that words, nouns, don't always take dhamma, right? Sometimes the vowel may change from a dhamma to a kasra. In the last lesson, four, we learned about prepositions, right? In the last lesson, number four, we learned about prepositions. We said the prepositions makes the noun that comes after the preposition majroor and it takes kasra. Now, we have another example of a word taking kasra and being majroor. Why? Because of al-idafa. So now we have two reasons why a noun may take kasra. The first reason is found in a preposition. The second reason is because it is mudafun ilay. And the mudafun ilay always takes kasra. Okay, so these are two reasons why a noun may be majroor. And there are other reasons, but for now that's what we have, okay? For now, Whenever you see a noun, and you don't know what the vowel is supposed to be, automatically assume, I see you, just give me one second. Automatically assume, if you don't know what the vowel is, automatically assume it's Dhamma all the time. Unless there's a rule that we learned that tells us it's going to change. So far we have two rules that change a noun from Dhamma to Kesra. One of them is found in a preposition. And the second one is Mudhafun Ilay. Please get that in your head. Because when you're reading, if you read a word that's supposed to have a Kesra, and you don't read it as Kesra, that means you don't know the rule. And note that when we're reading, the vowels, the first time you're given a word, the vowels are going to all be there. But after that, sometimes we're going to see the words without vowels. And you're going to say, I don't know, there's no vowel on the end of it. If there's no vowel on the end of it, it's automatically Dhamma all the time. Unless there's a rule changing it to something else. So far we have two rules to change it, from Dhamma to Kesra. Later on we'll see other rules that change it to Fatha or something else, okay? So pay attention to that. We only have two rules now, that's all. When you're reading, everything is going to be Dhamma, unless you see one of these two rules. Okay? Good? Okay, that's Ali Dalfa. Okay, so when we read the dialogue, these are the things you should be paying attention to. You should be looking for words that are connected like this in the Idafa construction. And you should know that the first part of the Idafa construction never takes Alif Lam or Tanween. Let that stick in your head, so when you're reading and you see it doesn't have Alif Lam or Tanween, you know why. You say, oops, I know why. Because nouns normally take Alif Lam or Tanween. So when you see a noun with no Alif Lam or Tanween, that should open up your brain and say, oops, something's happening here. What's happening? It's the Idafa construction. Okay, so once you know that, you know the next word that's found is going to what? Has to take Kesra. That's what you should be looking for in this lesson when we read the dialogue. Okay, there are three more points in this lesson that we'll just look over quickly. Point number two on page 13, Tahta. This word Tahta means under. Tahta means under. The noun following Tahta is in the genitive. That is, it is Majroor. The noun following tahta is in the genitive case. That is, it is majroor. Because it is mudhaf ilayhi. Because what? The noun following this word tahta. This is a dharf. Okay, we'll talk about that later in later lessons. For now, we just want to know that there's a new rule. We're not going to go into detail. But for one of the words that this rule applies to is going to be this word tahta. Okay, a word that shows position. Showing that it's underneath, or it's above, or in front of, or behind. Words that show position, they're called dharf. And the noun that follows a dharf is going to be majroor, the same way as the noun that follows a harf jar. Huh? Harf jar, the noun that follows it is what? Majroor. And the noun that follows a dharf is also majroor. So when you see the word tahta, and later on we'll see other words that follow the same rule, but for now we only have this one word, when you see it, then know that the noun following it is going to be majroor. Why? Because it is in idafa. It's connected in an idafa construction. Okay, but in this case it's showing position. Okay, and I give two examples. The first example from right to left is tahta al-maktabi. From right to left, right? Arabic is read from right to left, right? So we're going to go to the first example. Tahta al-maktabi or tahta al-maktabi. Which means underneath the table or desk. Okay, al-maktabi is taking kasra, it's majroor because what? It's an idafa to the word tahta. Second example, tahta al-kitabi. Tahta al-kitabi. Al-kitabi is majroor with kasra because it's connected in idafa to the word tahta. So whenever you see the word tahta, know that the noun following is going to be majroor. It's going to take kasra. Third point, ya is a vocative particle. It's called ya nida. A noun following ya has only one dhamma. Now remember, we had nouns before, right? Like Bilalun and Muhammadun and things like this, right? Those nouns that normally have tanween, if they're following ya and nida, Ya and Nida, the vocative Ya, when you're calling someone, trying to get their attention. Ya Ahmed! Ya Muhammad! Trying to call somebody. You know, what do you say in English when you're trying to call somebody? Yo! Huh? Ya! Yo, right? hey, like that, right? Same thing. That's the meaning of this. This is the vocative, yeah. You're trying to get somebody's attention. You call him, you're trying to get his attention. Ya Muhammad. The word, the noun, Muhammad, is the proper noun. Masculine proper nouns take tanween. But even though this noun normally takes tanween, if it's following ya, the vocative ya, it's not going to take tanween. It's going to take a single dhamma. Why? Well, in simple, in the simplest way possible I can put it, is that that is the way the Arabs made it. They said when a noun comes after ya and nida, khalas, it doesn't take tanween anymore. That's their rule. They made it like that. And that's the way it is. Huh? Ya Muhammadu. Don't say Muhammadun. Tayyib? So, for example, you have Ya Ustadhu with a single vowel. You have Ya Sheikhu. You have Ya Bilalu, not Ya Bilalun, etc. Okay, so this is a simple rule, it doesn't require much. Whenever you see Ya and Nida, the Ya that's used to call out somebody to get the attention, know that the noun following it would not. This is the general rule. Okay, there are some special specifics to this rule that we'll talk about later on, but for now, we're going to use it in its simplest sense. And this is the simplest form of the rule, that the noun after Ya and Nida doesn't take tanween, rather it takes a single dhamma. That being said, you might see in some cases where the noun after ya and nida is going to take a factor, a single factor instead of dhamma. That's another rule, that's a branch of this rule. We'll talk about that when we come to it. But I'm just saying to you, the basic rule is that it takes a single dhamma. There's subsidiary rules that it might, something else may happen. Okay? But for now, this is sufficient. This is the way we're going to see it for now. Tayyib? Okay, the last rule in this lesson is dealing with two words that begin with Hamzatul Wasl. Ismun and Ibnun. These two words commence with Hamzatul Wasl. When preceded by a word, any word, when they are preceded by a word, you're not beginning your speech with that word, Ibn or Ism, but rather there's something before it, then the initial Kasra is dropped in pronunciation. Meaning, instead of saying Ibnun or ismun, that kasra is actually, it has been added for pronunciation, because the word really, ibnun, really begins with the letter ba, with sukoon. And you can't begin a word with sukoon in Arabic language. So they added hamza til wasl, and in this case they put a kasra there in order for you to pronounce it. So you say ibnun. But that kasra is really added. It's not originally a part of the word. It was added. So you use it when you need it. If you begin with it, you use it. But if there's something else before, you don't need it anymore. You can use the vowel from the word that's before it to connect to the ba with sukoon. Because, right? Because what? There's hamzatul wasl there. Hamzatul wasl tells you to connect whatever is before it to whatever is after it. So if you connect the vowel from the word before ismun or ibnun, if you connect the vowel from the word that's before it to the sukoon letter, then we don't need that kasra anymore. We'll take it as hamzatul wasl and join whatever is before it to whatever is after it. Okay? So what's the rule here? The rule is that there are certain words in Arabic language, from amongst them is Ibn and Ism, that begin with Hamzatul Wasl. When they're preceded by another word, the initial kasra of Ibn or Ism is dropped in pronunciation. For example, we have two sentences or three sentences. Let's look at the first sentence. Ismu al-waladi bilalun. Right? Ismu al-waladi Bilalun. Ism here, it has a kasra, right? And we are using that kasra. We are in need of it. Why? Because we're beginning with it. And you can't begin with a sukoon, with seen with sukoon. So they added a kasra there. Okay? So we need it now. So we're saying, Ismu al-waladi bilalun. As the sentence goes on, right? Ismu al-waladi bilalun means what? The name of the child is Bilal. Wa ismu al-binti aminatu. Now notice the second ism here, there's something before, right? There's the letter waw with a factor. So now, since there's something before the word ism, we don't need that kasra anymore. So we don't say wa ismu al-binti. Don't say wa ismu al-binti. We don't need the kasra here anymore of ism, right? So now you just go what? The waw with factor should be connected by the Hamzatul Wasl. What's before the Hamzatul Wasl to what's after it. Okay? So what's going to happen here? We're going to say, wa. Look. Look at this on the board, right? Wa. This wow, right? This is a kasra that we added, right? This wow, since it's before the kasra, we don't need this kasra anymore. So this right here is actually Hamzatul Wasl. It's actually Hamzatul Wasl, right? That's why this kasra here, we just added it for pronunciation. But if you don't need it, the Hamzatul Wasl tells you what? Connect whatever is before it to whatever is after it. So don't say wa ismu. But rather you say what? Wasmu. That's it. You see, Hamzatul Wasl just join whatever is before to whatever is after it. And we have this example here, right? We have this example here in the name of Allah. This is is, right?
Yes.
This is a kasra because of a preposition, right? So we have bi ismillah, but this is Hamzatul Wasl. So we're going to connect what's before to what's after, and we say what? Bismillah. That's the same thing, except because in this expression Bismillah is so common in the Arabic language, they don't even write the Hamzatul Wasl. Khalas, we don't even need to write it. Normally you have to write it though. Hamzatul Wasl has to be written, but you don't pronounce it if there's something before it. You don't pronounce this vowel if there's something before it. But in this expression, because it's so common in the Arabic language, they just dropped the Hamzatul Wasl completely, and we just write it without it. We write ba, seen, meme, right? Bismillah. Huh? I'm pointing up here. Up here. Bismillah. This, really, there's the Hamzatul Wasl that is originally in this word that they added to it for pronunciation, but we don't need it now. So we're not even writing it. Naam. Wa alaykum as-salam. Same thing. Wa alaykum as-salam. The as-salam is alif lam, right? Al-salam, as-salam. So we don't need that fatah from the L, right? Because there's something before it. So then we're just dropping it. We connect what's before Hamzatul Wasl to what's after it. In any case, the important thing here, what we should really understand from this, is that there are words in Arabic language that originally begin with a sukoon. They add to it Hamzatul Wasl for pronunciation. If you begin with that word, you got to pronounce this vowel. If you begin with that word, you have to pronounce this vowel. If there's something before it, you don't have to pronounce this vowel. Rather, you're not allowed to pronounce this vowel. You have to just connect what's before the Hamzatul Wasl to whatever is after it. Okay, another example of this, they have the second sentence, Ibn al-Mudarrisi. Ibn al-Mudarrisi, Tabibun. The son of the teacher is a Tabib. What is Tabib? A doctor. The son of the teacher is a doctor. Ibn al-Mudarrisi Tabibun. Ibn, here we're pronouncing the kasra, right? Because we're beginning with it. But if there was something before, we won't need it anymore. So here we have wa, and also Ibn al-Imami Tajirun. And the son of the Imam is a Tajir. What's a Tajir?
Merchant.
Right? So instead of saying wa, Ibn al-Imam Tajirun, wa ibnu, don't say wa ibnu, you say what?
Wabnu.
Go straight across the Hamzatul Wasl, Wabnu al-Imam Tajirun. And the last example we have here, we have Aina ibn Hamidin. But here, the ibn, since there's something before, we're not going to pronounce the kasra, but we're going to go straight from Aina right to the ba. Huh? We're going to say what? Ainab. Ayna ibn Hamidin. Ayna ibn Hamidin. Ayna, where is Ibn Hamidin? What does the meaning of Ibn Hamidin? The son of Hamid. Or Hamid's son. The son of Hamid or Hamid's son. Same meaning. Hamid's son. The son of Hamid is Hamid's son. Okay? So these are examples of a couple of words in Arabic language that begin with Hamzatul Wasl because they actually originally begin with a sukoon. And if you begin with that word, you pronounce its vowel. Alaykum salam. But if there's something before it, any word before it, any word that's before it, just join it. Join, use the Hamzatul Wasl as a connector. Connect the last vowel of the word before it to the first letter of the word that begins with Hamzatul Wasl. Inshallah, these points, point 2, 3, and 4, tahta and ya and ibn and ism, these are minor points, but you do have to understand them. Okay, the word tahta, the noun that comes after it is majroor with kasra. The ya, when you're calling somebody, the noun that's after it does not take tanween. And ibn and ism, when you read them, if you begin with it, you pronounce that kasra, but if there's something before it, just skip over it. That's it, okay? Okay, we're going to go back to al-idafa, but first let's look at the vocabulary. Okay, who knows some of these vocabulary words in this new lesson? Who knows some of them at least? A little bit, a couple of them, one or two or three at least. Which one you know? You raised your hand just now. Okay, what about, okay, look, don't look at the vocabulary, just listen up for a second, huh? What's the meaning of tahta? Everybody knows that. Everybody should raise their hand. I said, who knows any words in this vocabulary? Everybody knows tahta, right? Who knows ar-rasul? Come on. Come on. We know some of these words already. We knew some of these words before we ever studied Arabic, right? So if somebody asks you, what's the meaning of assalamu alaikum? You don't have to study Arabic to know the meaning of that, right? Even some kafirs could tell you what's the meaning of assalamu alaikum. Some of them know how to say akhi and stuff like that. Huh? Fayyib, what's the meaning of al-ibnu? The son. Okay, what about Al-Ka'ba too? Ka'ba. Huh? Al-Ismu. Al-Tabibu. Al-Bintu. Listen. You underestimate yourselves. Have a vocabulary you already know. Have a vocabulary you already know. Because these, some of these are words that we already know. But we just didn't see them in Arabic before. We were just hearing these sounds. But now when you're reading, pay attention. You're going to come to find out you know a lot of words. You'd be surprised at how many Arabic words you know. But you just never counted them because you weren't studying Arabic before maybe. Okay, pay attention. You'll be surprised at how many Arabic words you know. These vocabulary words are incumbent upon us to know. We're going to go over them quickly. Inshallah, you can open your book and look at the vocabulary. I'm just going to read through them. Try to listen for the sound. Okay? Most of them are very easy words. They are not difficult. But if you find any difficulty with anyone, practice. Okay, we're going to go from the right column, straight down. Tahta, which means under or beneath. Al-ibnu. In fact, why don't you repeat with me so you can practice saying them, okay? Tahta.
Tahta.
Which means under or beneath. Al-ibnu.
Al-ibnu.
Son. As-sayyaratu.
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 Which means a car, automobile. Huna.
Huna.
That means here. Hunaka.
Hunaka.
Which means there, over there. Here and there. Al-bintu.
Al-bintu.
Which means daughter or girl. Al-tabibu.
Al-tabibu.
Which means the doctor. Ar-rasulu.
Ar-rasulu.
Means the messenger. Why don't we say El Rasulu, since there's Alif Lam there? Naam. Huh? Because the Huruf Shamsiyya, right? The letter Ra is from the sun letters. And when we have a sun letter beginning a word, because Alif Lam, we don't say El, right? We don't say El Rasulu. We say Ar Rasulu. We don't say El Rahman, right? We say what? Rahman. We don't say El Rahim. We say what? Like this, okay? Remember the sun letters. Remember the sun letters. We had that in lesson 3. Sun letters and moon letters. Tayyib. Al-ammu. That's a paternal uncle, meaning the your father's brother. Ash-shari'u. Means the street. And it has other meanings also, but we'll leave it for now. Al-ka'batu. Means the Kaaba in Mecca. Al-Khalu. Means maternal uncle, your mother's brother. Mughlaqun. Mughlaqun. Gha. Mughlaqun. Means closed or shut. Al-Ismu. The name. Al-Haqibatu. The bag or case or briefcase. Al-Haqibatu. Ha. Ha. Al-Haqibatu. That's this one here, right? Ha. Like in Muhammad. Huh? Al-Haqibatu. Okay, let's look at the lesson. Arabic text, the dialogue on page 27. Go back to the beginning of the book. The Arabic section of the book on page 27.